deputy chair, the commission and colleagues and staff, you are most welcome, and we are sorry for keeping you waiting. I think without much ado, we are happy to always to have you here. We would like to afford you an opportunity to present your annual performance plan. But I can tell you that you can see the honorable members are tired, because everybody who comes here, they are asking for money. And we don't know where to find the money, and so they are depressed. It's not that they are not interested in what we're going to say. They are depressed by the requests for money. So, over to you, Mrs. Chan.
Thank you. You know, I've been a member of this house for some years, and I feel at home, sir. And thank you for welcoming us and making us feel at home. I want to introduce my delegation to you, first of all. I am, unfortunately, the chairperson, Professor Bongani Majola, is abroad at the moment, and he sends his apologies and is unable to be with us. So I'm deputizing for him. So please don't shoot the messenger. I'm being accompanied by the deputy chair. I'm the deputy chair by Commissioner Chris Nissen. He is a commissioner of the Human Rights Commission, and also by Advocate Sediso Tipanyani, who is the CEO of the Human Rights Commission, Mr. Peter Makwenete, who is the CFO of the Human Rights Commission, and Mr. Lloyd Lotz, who is the Provincial Manager of Western Cape, and Mr. Loreto Lawley, who is a Human Rights Officer, and Ms. Fadla Adams, who is a senior researcher for Parliament and International Affairs. That is my delegation today, sir. No, okay, I won't. that is a delegation, sir. Thank you very much. We only have two items on the agenda. We have the overview of the revised strategic plan for 2018 and 19 and their performance plan, which will be presented by Advocate Sediso Tipanyani. And then the second item is the overview of the budget, which will be presented by Mr. Peter Makwenete, the CFO. Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members of the Committee. It's a pleasure for us to be here and to share with you what we intend doing in this new financial year, starting on the 1st day of April. As far as next slide. By way of our introductory remarks, Chair, we just want to point that this is the first strategic plan and annual performance done by the commissioners in this new term. As you are aware, the commissioners took office in January last year, and by then a lot of work had been done in the strategic plan and annual performance plan for the year 2017-2018. So basically, this is now the new footprint of the new commission. And of course, I also rejoined the commission only last year, June. So at least going forward, even I will be held accountable for my advice to the commissioners. Then the second point, Chair, is that we have also assigned a number of focus areas for commissioners, for this new financial year. Fadla, please just go to the next slide and we'll get back. So basically, we have assigned our eight commissioners different areas of responsibility in terms of our mandate to promote and protect human rights. So the chairperson is assigned issues of healthcare, deputy chair, equality and social cohesion, Commissioner Malachi, disability and social security, Commissioner Makwetla, children and migration, and we hear that the Western Cape province is actually in the process of having a child rights commission, so that will be an interesting development. And Commissioner Gam, who is responsible for education, Commissioner Mirna, water, sanitation and housing, Commissioner Sibanyan, who used to be a member of this committee many weeks ago, is responsible for land, environment and right to food, and of course issues of land are back at the forefront in our country's discourse around human rights. And Commissioner Nissen, who's in charge of civil and political rights, and this is also a very important area of work in the Commission in view of the high levels of crime and many other issues. Back to slide 3, Fadla. Yeah, and then, Chair, as far as point number 3 is concerned, this is also another new development for the Commission in terms of our work. I mean, as you know, we have a very broad mandate. The entire Bill of Rights is our mandate. And the thinking was, you know, we need to at least prioritize and be more focused in terms of our work and in relation to the challenges our country is experiencing. And therefore, we said the Commission will focus its work on these four overarching thematic areas, poverty, inequality, unemployment, and violence. As we are all aware, we have very high levels of poverty in our country. We also have high levels of inequality. A few weeks ago, we were told that 1% of South Africans own 70% of the country's wealth. And of course, that will create instability in our country, and also a perception that, you know, nothing much is being done to fight for human rights, and nothing much is being done to address some of the founding values of our country, which is the promotion of equality. Unemployment is our third focus area. Also, we have very high levels of unemployment, including almost 50% of unemployment amongst the youth. And of course, violence against women and children is still a major crisis in our country, including, of course, high levels of murder rates. And therefore, as the Human Rights Commission, if we have a mandate to promote and protect human rights, we cannot close our eyes from these realities. And therefore, the issue is we should then try in our work to actually have a contribution in addressing these very important challenges. Not to say that we'll ignore others, but the idea is that, you know, we should all try in our different corners in the Commission to try and have an impact on these four issues. It's poverty, inequality, unemployment, and violence. And then the fourth point, which you have alluded to, yes, like many other public bodies, our budget was cut. We were told that Peter, the CFO, will speak to that. Of course, there are a number of concerns about this. You know, in terms of our independence, we are required to show that we do have financial independence, that our budgets will not be cut by the state as a way of punishing us or as a way of undermining our work. But at the same time, we are also quite aware of the challenges, economic challenges this country is facing. And but we do acknowledge that. And of course, like everybody else, would like to have more money in order to do our work, which we think is very important. But of course, you know, in view of these challenges, and you'll probably hear later on that the chairs of the Chapter 9 institutions basically requested a meeting with the President to express these concerns and many other issues. But at the same time, this is also an opportunity for us as the Commission to see what can we do with our current budgetary restrictions, and how do we do our work better, and how do we collaborate better with other institutions, and how can we be more effective with what we have. So we are also not just folding our arms or throwing up our arms in the air saying, well, we have no money. There are a number of cost-cutting measures which we are looking into in order to try and do our work better. So it is a bit of a challenge, but it's also a bit of an opportunity for us to see how we marshal our resources better in order to give effect to our mandate. Of course, we'll keep on raising issues of budget cuts, but you know, we're also looking at other ways of dealing with this. And of course, point five is some of the issues which we have done to respond to this cost-cutting measures. So as an example, Chairperson, we have frozen three posts in the Commission, that of the office manager for commissioners. So I'm now sharing my office manager with the commissioners. We've also frozen the post of the office manager of our chief operation officer. So again, my office manager now has to triple up with those three streams. And we've also suspended one other post for a research advisor to a part-time commissioner. So we now have one research advisor servicing two part-time commissioners, which we think is actually logical because they are part-time. I will now go straight into our revised strategic plan, FATLA, page 6. I guess this is standard. These are, of course, our oriented, outcome-oriented goals as to what, you know, we in terms of our strategy, in terms of our mandate, we have to focus on in order to effectively realize our mandate. We do have to enhance good corporate governance in the organization and also strengthen our capacity, you know, in order to be able to do our work. So we need to constantly ask ourselves, how do we become more efficient? How do we ensure that our staff members are more productive than they are? This is an ongoing challenge, especially in view of the challenges we've seen in this country of governance in state-owned enterprises, but also in government, in other organs of state, that issues of governance is very important, and we need to tighten that up far better than we are currently now. The second one, of course, you know, we need to continue promoting respect for human rights and the human rights culture. And of course, this is still a major challenge for us in view of the challenges around the country, inequalities, lots of public protests, some very violent, and a whole lot of things. And sometimes, you know, we question ourselves to say, are we really doing enough in view of the many challenges we have around our country? The third one, of course, is the promotion, to promote the protection, development, and attainment of human rights. Again, we are the most important state institution as far as the promotion and protection of human rights. And what contribution are we making as a commission in coming up with new innovations, in better ways of promoting and protecting human rights? And I think that is why we're established. We need to be at the top of the game. We need to think out of the box. And so those are some of the things we are working at. The fourth one, Chair, is the monitoring and assessing the observance of human rights in our country. This is a very huge mandate for us. As you know, our mandate cuts across public and private sectors. You know, with our limited resources, how are we going to fulfill this mandate of assessing the observance of human rights in this country and making an opinion and advising government? So if we're just to look at the private sector, there are lots of violations in the private sector. And what is our role there as a commission? And of course, this is one of our weak areas as a commission in how we deal with human rights violations or promotion of human rights in the private sector. notwithstanding the huge challenges we also have in the public sector. You look at the challenges at local government level. There are over 286 municipalities. How do we deal with those in a much smarter manner? How do we reduce the level of public protest over service delivery? You know, sometimes we say to ourselves, every time there is a public protest over service delivery, water sanitation, it means those people on the streets don't really have much confidence in us as a Human Rights Commission. And we need to address that. The next page is just our strategic objectives in order to make sure that, you know, we do realize our mandate. And I think I've already spoke to some of those issues, so I'll just be very quick. Of course, as I was saying, we need to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the Commission. We need to ensure that there is more collaboration and integration of work between commissioners and staff, and also within staff members. We have different departments, and sometimes we really don't work together as a cohesive unit. And secondly, of course, we need to deepen the understanding of human rights and the entrenchment of a culture of human rights in our country. That's still a challenge. And of course, point three is our mandate to provide appropriate redress where human rights have been violated. And for us, this is also a very interesting issue that, you know, following the decision of the Constitutional Court on the powers of the, on the binding powers of the public protector, we're taking the position that the findings of the commission are also binding until overturned through a judicial review. But that is still a debate. We've had debates with colleagues in justice, but we have said that's our position. The reading of our act is very clear, and if people have a different view, the courts are there, open. And then the fourth one, of course, is for us to conduct research in order to be able to monitor and assess and report on the observance of human rights. Chair, I need to acknowledge that, you know, this has been a major challenge for us in the past 7 years because, to a large extent, our socio-economic rights monitoring mechanisms or processes have not really been up to scratch, and now we are currently trying to revise and revise that so that we are able to make a determination whether there is indeed a progressive realization of economic and social rights, whether there is a progressive realization in fighting against poverty, unemployment, lack of water and housing. That is our mandate. If you read section 181 of the section 184.1 and section 184.3 of the Constitution. And we are trying to you know, improve on that. I hope next time we come here we'll be able to say and we'll move forward in this regard. Then the next slide is basically you know, some of our indicators in terms of the previous strategic objectives which we have mentioned. These are standard issues, of course, compliance with legislation, risk management plans, and so forth. This is boring stuff, so I'll skip that. And the next page is also, you know, the same issue of the targets we have set for ourselves. And of course, when we are set and we report to you, we'll be telling you whether we have actually indeed complied or met the targets that we have set for ourselves. Page 10, you know, is again our indicators in terms of our strategic objective 2, the number of key stakeholder engagements we need to have, the number of media and communication activities we need to have. I must say here on this one, without getting into our report, our annual report, which will be coming, we have been trying very hard to have a presence in the media. And I'm sure there is definitely an improvement from last year to now. We try almost every week to be in the media, right across the country, community radio stations, and so forth. 2.4, development of materials, Human Rights Day events, and so forth. And then we go to the next one, Strategic Objective 3. This is our protection mandate. And Chair, I need to point out that we have actually a number of complaints and inquiries finalized. The target now is number of complaints. which we think we can carry. Last year, we had a target of 85%, which really did not make sense to some of us, because we're saying, you know, you cannot say you do 85% of complaints when you don't control the number of complaints coming to you. So if it becomes a million, then you are failed. If it's 100, you are overperforming, and then you get the reward for doing very little work. So basically, said we need to have a very clear understanding of what is our caring capacity. So if you have 30 lawyers, how many complaints can those 30 lawyers deal with, so that at least we can be able to make a better assessment? That's why then we have changed the targets. 3.2 is the number of strategic impact litigation. It's 2. There's still a bit of a challenge here, because, you know, I was saying to colleagues that, you know, the Human Rights Commission should actually be one of the major litigants in constitutional court cases, in changing, you know, the discourse, in changing policies, in changing the law as far as human rights are concerned. And unfortunately, we've not really been that strong. We still tend to focus a lot in magistrate court around issues of equality, but we are not really having an important impact in terms of litigation in changing laws and policies. So it's something which we need to be working on there. 3 is basically the report which we'll give to you on our complaints trends. We issue that every year. The next one will be coming there in September. 3.5, Chair, is a bit of a challenge for us. Completion of hearings. The Commission has been having hearings in the past, quite many, and of course, one of the challenges that, you know, we hardly follow up on the recommendations we've had, and we need to change that. But secondly, we have had a bit of a backlog on the hearing reports, which have not yet been completed. So we need to complete all the outstanding hearing reports. And then the next page, we've also changed. This is our research monitoring area, strategic objective 4. We used to produce a number of reports around human rights. Now we've taken the decision that we should have one major report on human rights, state of human rights, which will include, you know, our work around socioeconomic rights, our work on equality, and any other thing, and try and put everything together, because, you know, human rights are interrelated, interdependent, and so forth. So it's a new approach, and we'll see how it will work to have everything in one report as far as the observance of human rights in our country and our perspectives on that. It also includes, of course, how the country adheres to its international treaty reports and so forth. And then, of course, the other part there, we still do a bit of research. These are short papers on key issues around human rights in the country. We'll have seminars. And, of course, the PIA annual report. That is also still a bit of a challenge because, you know, we are not sure as to when we'll hand over our PIA mandate to the information commissioner. And again, it's still a bit of a problem, Chair. I think last time we did point that out that this report to a large extent is based on the reports which both public and private entities give to the commission in terms of how they have actually implemented access to information. You know, the number of calls they've received and how they've dealt with. And there's still a major challenge in this, Chair. I mean, out of the 286 municipalities, 256 or 250, let me just round up, did not even bother reporting to the Human Rights Commission to tell us, you know, how many requests have members of the public made to access information in municipalities. And we're still trying to chase after this. The challenge, Chair, is that even municipalities cannot tell the Human Rights Commission how many requests they've received from the public about access to information. There is a correlation with the number of public protests we see in the country. Oh, sorry. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, so I was saying this also has a relationship with the number of public service delivery protests we see in municipalities, where, you know, if people were to be able to be informed by the municipalities what is being done to attract express their concerns, maybe there will be a better understanding. But if municipalities cannot even tell the Human Rights Commission how many requests they've received from members of the public, there is a problem there. The other one is the submission of reports, our own reports, to international bodies. As you are aware, we have observer status and in the UN Human Rights Council, so we do make reports, shadow reports, to our own country's reports to the Universal Periodic Review process. We make shadow reports to our country's state reports to various UN treaty bodies. So this is the work which we deal with. So every time our government has to report, we do also make a report, and we also appear in those committees depending on where it's relevant. And then 4.7, Chair, is linked to the issue of which I was raising earlier on about our hearing reports, that, you know, we have realized that, you know, we have been producing numerous reports with recommendations, but due to how we've been operating in the past, we hardly ever monitor to see whether those recommendations are being followed or not, and if they are not being followed, what are the challenges, what we must do. So we've taken this decision that, you know, for this coming financial year, this new financial year, we'll revisit all our reports and check, you know, whether the recommendations we have made have been implemented or not. Because otherwise, you know, we just contribute to impunity where we make recommendations, people just ignore them and they collect dust, and therefore actually wasting public resources in this regard. So, Chair, I will end here and we'll take questions, or I'll hand over to my colleague, our CFO, on the issues of the budget.
Just by way of opening, you know, I think South Africans, who are the most ungrateful people, and sometimes ungrateful even to ourselves. You know, I remember it was in 1987 in Arusha when Johnny McCartney, then responsible for international relations in the governing party, mooted the idea of a human rights commission. And the person who has driven this idea to its fruition is Dr. Zola Skweyiya, who has just passed on. And the people who were victims of the violations of these human rights, who defended them, the only name that all of us and every household knew was Priscilla Jana. But you see, because we don't write our own history, we don't talk about our own history, we introduce these things as if we're introducing manna from heaven. I'm sure when the young people in the township see you measure, they won't recognize you. They won't even know that for you, human rights is not something that came from the book. It's something that you advocated, you defended the parents and grandparents about. It came to my attention that there's a report produced by the Human Rights Commission, produced by Commissioner Amir Mia, that less than 40% of South Africans understand the constitutions and the Bill of Rights. And I see, for instance, now, in terms of your priorities, is poverty, inequality, unemployment, and violence. And I ask myself, as a human rights commission, what can you actually do to address poverty? Because poverty is a question of service delivery, is a question of resources, and government departments must address those issues. Is violence, mostly violence against women and children, and maybe the ignorance of our people of, you know, the sacred nature of these women and children, and the deepening moral degeneration leads to this violence against women and children. And now I ask myself, when are we going to contextualize these matters in the light of the history of where we come from, in terms of where we come from? And when I hear you talking about litigation, we are concerned about lawfare. That, you know, departments are taken to court for not obeying the remedial actions of the public protector, for instance. Now, if all the Chapter 9 institutions take governments to court and departments are going to have to defend themselves, how much of their budget would be left for them to deliver the services that you want them to deliver? And another failure on our part as Parliament, as government, is the implementation of the CADA report, which I guess if we were to implement it, perhaps would rationalize the Chapter 9 institution and save costs and release some costs for the much needed work that needs to be done. And you look at municipalities who are voted by the poorest of the poor, you wonder why they can't even have a part of a budget to establish advice centers and really help augment your resources and do some work. So and now we make a report to the United Nations, and everywhere we produce documents. Yesterday I was going through my studies. I see a book called Promoting Children's Rights in South Africa. I find the work done from 1987 from Mama Albertina Sisulu, Sister Bennett Mwuva, Zola Skweyiya. And when I listen to you now, you're talking about the establishment of a Children's Rights Commission in the Western Cape, which means that we may be wanting to create something that was done as early as 1988. 7. The term of office of this government is coming to an end in May. It means that the government that is going to be elected next year may also want to be revolutionary, start afresh, to do what was done a long time ago and not implement. So I'm just saying all these things because I also want to sensitize the honorable members here that at the end of this session, we must, informed by your recommendation, come up with a minimum program of action of doable things, because we can't do everything. Even if we had wanted to do everything, we wouldn't have the resources to do everything. What are the minimum things that we think before the next term we can do to make a difference and say to our people we care, and with the limitations we have, but this is what we can say for the past 5 years we have delivered. Because to take government departments to court to say they've not done this and so on and so on, the victims of those violations don't even follow the discussions in the court. They are not even interested. When they wake up, they are looking for food, water, drinks for survival. I remember the last time there was a conference on hate speech organized by yourselves, and then even now, we even at this parliament, we have not passed that act on hate speech, which means that after this term of office, other MPs must come and debate the same thing. I ask myself, are we going two steps forward and two steps backward? What are we doing? So I'm just suggesting, honorable members, that maybe we must take advantage of your appearance before us to say you need resources, yes, you have a program of action, yes, but what are the things that we can do that will be visible, tangible, that we can go back to our people and say, we have a Human Rights Commission. This is what, in the past 5 years, it has done to you, other than saying we are going to produce other reports on human rights, because our shelves are even full of reports, and these reports are not even accessible to the people that need the protection of the Chapter 9 institutions. And I also would want to appeal to the honorable members that we ourselves should not really focus on finding fault with the Human Rights Commission, but help them to shape a product that can be useful to the majority of our people, especially the women and children that are suffering in those townships and former settlement. But thank you very much for a very good and short report and for presenting it in a short time so that we can have enough time to engage. No, you know what we wanted to do is to also get the pattern, if you allow that, we get them to do a presentation on the budget so that we discuss the program in relation to the budget. And then, Honorable Mpumulwana, because you are still enjoying your meal, maybe just continue as long as you lend us your ears. Can we get the presentation on the budget so that we don't discuss things in isolation from one another?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Chairperson, the summary of our budget basically, Chair, is that of the 2018-19 budget, after we've paid salaries, we've paid our rentals, and we've paid all our IT commitments, we are basically, Chairperson, left with 3.3 million. Available to support the core programmatic work of the Commission. And so when we actually look into 2019-20, the picture gets even more bleaker. We will be left with about 40,000 available for programmatic work. So that's the major challenge that we're facing, because there's going to come a point where all we will be able to can do is to pay salaries and rentals, and we can't do some of the work that we need to be doing in terms of our promotion, protection, and our research work. So the CEO has already touched on some of the things that we are doing in terms of responding to the financial challenges. And one of the biggest item, Chair, which we think we need to be working on is with regards to our office rental for head office. Our budget annually is about 14 million. And we are in a process where the CEO has directed us to review our office space utilization and see where we can do some budget cuts. And there's going to be a point where we need to go open plan so that we can rationalize, and at least if we can reduce the 14 million we spend on office rentals to at least about 10 or 9. I think it will assist in terms of our situation. But I think, Chairperson, this is linked to the point you've just raised earlier about the issue of amalgamation, because we are at a point where it becomes a bit difficult for us to make some decisions to say what do we do with regards to office rentals, because over 5 years we spent close to 80 million. And if we can have some certainty, one will allow the Commission to reduce some spending over in terms of office rental, Chairperson, over 5 years, for example. As I'm indicating, for 18-19, our office rental budget is 14 million, and with 10% escalation, it goes up. So if you take the period 2018-19 to 2020-22, you'll find that we'll have spent close to 40 million.
And foreigners occupying unutilized and underutilized government buildings throughout the country, when we have departments of public works nationally, provincially, and government has to spend 80 million on rentals, unless maybe if we rent from our friends. So I think this is a big indictment on us, because if we were to just take government property all over and renovate, we could occupy those, and then that money could really go into program. So I'm not blaming you. I think all of us, there's something wrong with ourselves because we can't have such huge. And you see, all the Chapter 9 institutions would come and say, we want a footprint, which means they want to have offices in all the provinces and pay all the rentals. But proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the colleagues in Cape Town in the Office for Institutions Supporting Democracy have requested all the Chapter 9 institutions to make our reports of how much we spend on rental. And they've now consolidated the information. As to what has happened to that report, we do not know, Chair. So, and I think it's something which we think the committee will could go a long way in terms of supporting, in terms of how do we consolidate the spending on office rentals. So we can move to the next slide. So, Chair, the next slide just gives an overview of how the breakdown of the 178 million. And then the next slide just gives an analysis. Basically, you see that 72% of our budget goes to personal cost, and 26% of that budget goes to office rentals, where you see 23 million. This is including other provinces. So the 14 million I alluded to, Chair, is only for head office, and then you've got the different provinces there. And the AG also, we spent 3 million rand on paying for the audit fees. And I think this is something which has been raised at the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy to say, if the AG will give us an exemption that we do not pay the 3 million, it will assist in terms of our core programmatic work. So as I've indicated, Chair, 1.8% is what remains in terms of going to our core programmatic work. So we can go to 3.3%. So from the 178, we take 128 million goes to personnel cost, 46 million pays AG, office rentals, our IT commitments, and then only 3.3 remains. And then in 2019, we will only have 40,000 available. Yeah, thanks. The CEO has already spoken to the personal cost in terms of the vacancies, the posts that we've had to freeze. So going forward, Chair, what we've put in place as well to manage our personal costs is that if there's any vacancy that emanates, the line manager is requested to motivate to the CEO so we can assess the criticality of that position to say, do we need to fill it, can we do without it, etc. So as part of trying to rationalize our personnel cost. So Chair, the rest of the slides, I think we won't go into, it's just the breakdown in terms of programs. So I think, Chair, we will end there in terms of the budget. Thank you.
You've heard for yourselves. Let's take in hand Honorable Mutapo. Honorable Skosana. Honorable Maila. Honorable Horn. Don't honorable on because of age. When he has raised his hand, he okay, I know. I'll recognize him first.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we only have 57 minutes for us to ask questions and for them jointly to respond. Yes, because we have just received messages that because of the national bus strike, we'll be using minibuses, so we must be outside by 5 past 5. Okay, thank you. We need to take that into consideration. Yes, so it means, as you always say, we mustn't start with preamble, straight to the question. Thank you. Okay, thank you for the presentation. Deputy Chair, who's acting chair today, and commissioners, colleagues. Chairperson, last time when they appeared before us, we were promised that they will bring the Leeuwenstad report. So that one relating to a school in Northwest, yes, the 2014. Please keep us posted on that. And again, the constitutional awareness. In regions, the only available constitutions are mostly in Afrikaans. Yes. So is it possible for the head office to supply regions with constitutions of all languages? Let me take this, like in Limpopo, it will be Northern Sotho, Pedi, Venda, and Tsonga, and so forth. KwaZulu-Natal, the same, please. And then your relationship with Foundation for Human Rights. And then that school is Lior Dorenstadt School. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Lior Dorenstadt School report. Yes. And then I have a slight challenge when coming to budget. You are only left with 3.3 for core work. But at the same time, there are two commissioners who are supposed to be based at head office. So with this budget cut, then now and then you fly them to to head office for meetings. How do you reconcile the two? And then again, the recent SABC issue of abusing the rights of their employees per se. I know that I'm aware there is Public Service Commission, but as Human Rights Commission, what are you doing in that regard? Like in Thobela FM, you might be well aware of SAFM, but in Thobela FM, there is this thing of recycling of former employees at the expense of very young employees who have been dismissed. And now, during his State of the Nation address, the President, His Excellency Dr. Ramaphosa, made it clear that there won't be any job losses and the youth employment will be created. Let me stop there for the sake of time, Chapter 2.
No. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And greetings again to my colleague and the Human Rights Commission as led by Deputy Chairperson. Yeah, I think we welcome the presentation, the comprehensive presentation, which also includes the annual performance plan and the budget. Yeah, I just want to check the accessibility of the commission to our masses, especially our rural masses. I know that you've got offices in all provinces, but I think most provinces are very vast. So I'm just checking as whether are you doing enough in reaching out to our people, for our people to know that the Human Rights Commission, what is standing for, how can it help them? I think, like CEO alluded, like you find people are doing and stuff on issues that maybe the Human Rights Commission was going to assist them, or some are taking other cases to court on their own while the Human Rights Commission is there. So are you doing enough to reach out to our people to make them aware that you are there, what are you standing for, how can you help them, and all those things? That's what I'm just worried about, as to whether our people really aware. And also, you also raised something that I think is quite worrying, that the municipalities, I think 250 municipalities are not reporting
in terms of to see how many people are accessing information from them. Also on that point, I'm just asking myself, are they all well aware that they are supposed to do that? Because if you are saying about 250 municipalities, I mean only 86 out of 250 were complying, the whole 250 is not complying. Just what, are they well aware that they are supposed to do that? And well, the last point on the budget, yeah, no, I think you are on a red flag. Yeah, you are on a red flag. I think if it, you, it was a private company, I think you could be preparing to close it. Because if, I mean, out of 100% of your budget, you are only using 1.8% for your core business. it's a big problem. Only 1.8% of the 100% of the budget. It means this. It's like, I mean, the institution only exists just to create employment for people, to pay salaries, to make sure that you appoint people, to pay salaries, we pay rentals, we pay that, traveling allowance. It only exists just to create employment for people. But it does not exist for core business, because you don't have money for your core business. I think it's a serious challenge. It's a serious challenge, I think, Chair, we need to look at. But also these issues of cost curtailment, I think we appreciate, like we indicated, that some of the posts, we have frozen them, and then you are trying, I think, your level best to cut costs. I think we also have to look at those issues of rentals. How can we assist you? How can the department, various departments, assist you in making sure that you maybe get a cheaper accommodation, or you get accommodated in government buildings, so that at least you can save the other amount for your core business. I think your matter needs to be looked at, because you don't have money to do what you are supposed to do. It's a serious challenge. No, thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chair. And maybe let me also appreciate the presentation. In line with what Honorable Skosana was saying, if I'm looking at the fees that we pay to the Auditor General, they are just slightly below what you have as your core business. I mean, it's a sad case. Now, I don't have a problem with you suggesting that your remedial action should be binding. But I would like to check if there is anything that you have proposed in the recent past, which we can check if ever it was challenged, whether it was somebody said it was not binding, or people just said these are just mere recommendations. I would like to share with us that. One of your thematic areas is the issue of violence that we have identified. Now, you see, one of the causes of violence is the uncontrolled proliferation of small arms and light weapons. I would like to check if the commission can have a feel of how small arms and light weapons cause violence in the country, in various parts of the country. It might be especially in our townships and in urban areas. Those are my issues, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maila. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. Now, firstly, I just want to check, because I didn't necessarily understand that only 1.8% of the budget, over 3.3 million, was available for operations. Obviously, some of the operations is factored in the balance of the budget, but if that could just be explained to us, I would welcome that, because otherwise I misunderstood it. But Chair, I must firstly add my voice to yours to say that if one looks at this in a holistic manner, then obviously the amount spent on rental or the lease of the building is something that should be seriously looked at, and I think we must welcome it that the Commission itself has identified this as something that must be done. And then also, Chair, in respect of the the issue of violence already referred to by some of the colleagues and one being now identified as one of the four scourges plaguing our country, and also then the statement to say that the Commission is looking towards establishing or broadening, if it exists, the human rights culture in this country. I want to ask, what balance does the Commission strike between policing transgressions of basic rights of our citizens versus establishing or advocacy for a human rights culture? And why I'm asking this is, for example, if we just look towards what's been happening over the past 2 days, where in the northwest we see destruction of infrastructure, given the fact that we're a poor country, we struggle to just deliver the most basic of services to our citizens. And I'm not taking away or saying that we should take away the right of people to be angry or unhappy. The question is just, what role does the Commission see for itself to ultimately go to those communities and try and also educate and advocate for a culture where we don't destruct property and public infrastructure because we are unhappy with whatever is going on, versus if we look towards the other side of the coin, policing infractions of basic human rights. Thank you.
I've already greeted all of you. That is, so I'm not greeting anymore. I'm only saying you and us should come together to solve the problems that you have. We work together. In that way, if we have any power to do anything. I just want to find out with your strategic plan, your organizational structure, to me, I don't see how it can work in that. I probably would suggest that you divide the country into areas, or what you call regions, and let each commissioner, or you allocate those regions to various commissioners, so that everything is being done. Because if you have, let's say, for example, a commissioner who concentrates on the human rights against farms or prisons, then he must go right through the country. And whereas if each commissioner has got an area, and everything, instead of various things allocated to various commissioners, because they can't go around the country to concentrate on that thing only. He's going to concentrate on everything that is on education everywhere, right through the country. And whereas if it was within an area, I don't want to call it provinces because, you know, the premiers are going to be angry, but you can divide the country into various areas or regions. Then you allocate commissioners. That's the first thing. So this to me, it may save a lot of money. Because what is important is people who must travel are people who are food soldiers. People who go to this place and listen to people, have meetings in various places. But if you have got now the area, then you know that you have covered that area of yours. And, you know, then rather than having a commissioner, sometimes we have to go to Mpumalanga, another wheel. He runs to Cape, to Western Cape, he runs to, you know, and so on. That is the first suggestion I think you need to consider, if you don't mind. Secondly, and I think that will be more effective in that way. And the public will know who you are.
in that discourse, I have sympathy for the, when you say human rights, I think you are supposed to be the one that's looking for the very, very, very oppressed people, people with less or no voice. If you remember correctly, I raised the question at some stage and even now, that there are people who don't even know that they've got rights, who don't even know people, don't read people, who don't even have rights. There are people in the farm who have no home, depend workplace in a way. And there's no human rights going there. There are people in prison who have no way of protecting themselves, who depends entirely on the person who is behind, who is the policeman who is there, and the gang master who is around for his survival. Those are the people that we should start. The people who are homeless, those are the people who sleep in the streets when it's cold. Now, your duty is a very, very important one. I have a proposal on the question of finance. I don't want to say that you're not doing the best, but I'm saying that it may not be done. For example, you've got a right to ask money from Lotto. You've got a right to ask money from various organizations that can donate money. You've got that, unlike other departments or other such. I don't see how you have done that yet to try and get more money to do your job. Thirdly, there is something that perhaps we can try. In some of the countries in the world, the offices are usually where you stay. You have got an office in your house and you use technology. Almost everything that you communicate, discuss, you save by going back. Only when you have to go to meeting, to actual core business, that is meeting the people, training. There is something that was done by one Pakistan leader, which I will not say who was. I will steal something from that Pakistan leader. Of course, it was a small Pakistan. But in each and every office of government, outside, there was a policeman or a soldier or something, an office. So when people are not satisfied with what is happening there, they go to that. They know that if I go to the soldier is going to tell the big boss, and these people will be in trouble. There is no such a thing. People are oppressed by soldiers, by police, by civil servants, hospital, in various areas. But there is nobody. There's no place where they can say, here am I, what I know if I go to so-and-so. This is my mother. And I know something is going to happen. Human Rights Commission, like most of the organization, is for the rich. It goes right, a city man, everybody runs, it's a big deal, because it's in the news, the city man. But you talk about only very few people. I'm not saying they are not important, but I'm saying that they are being treated by the media. What the media says is important. The human rights is to be asked what, you know. So I suggest that we concentrate more on the very oppressed people, if possible. And we use technology, less traveling, I understand that you've got only one office, which is in Joburg, and you must all go there every time, and I don't understand how you do it, but anyway, that's the point. Thank you very much.
I hate a situation where we'd go back to Parliament and say, actually, we don't need the Human Rights Commission. If the Human Rights Commission exists only to create employment for people, I want to make a suggestion that maybe you go back, have a two-day workshop, and just rethink this whole thing in the light of the comments that are being made here. Because I can tell you, we involved your Human Rights Office in Limpopo about commissions of Mashau, Chitocheni, Matiza. Even today, they have not come back. Just here outside Pretoria, there are Bakatlaba, Muchaba, Popolo, there are Baboba Muhale. They have to go to court against government and the Human Rights Commission. It can't do anything for them. And the point that is being made about advocacy, human rights, people have got to take to the streets and destroy property, maybe because they need education, they need advocacy. What do we do? Do they know their rights? There's a Foundation for Human Rights. It's getting. Have you had a meeting with them? And just to say, how do we share resources? But let me not answer for you, but I think before we report to Parliament, I think we need a report from yourself as to how different are you going to do things, because as the honorable members are saying, we now just say, if this institution exists to create jobs, then it doesn't deserve to exist itself. Honorable Maile.
Thanks, Chair. I would like to put one thing in its proper perspective, that what was being said was not that the victims of SED many were not vulnerable. That is not the impression. It's only that maybe the coverage was very high profile than any other case anywhere. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, in the interest of time, I'll start and then my leaders will fill in the gaps. Chair, just to say, you know, we have had 2 weeks of strategic thinking and planning last year around November and early this year to basically, and of course with my coming back to the Commission, to say, you know, we know the path. And how do we do things differently? So what we are presenting to you is actually our plan going forward. How different can we be as a Human Rights Commission? How greater an impact can we have? So just starting with the innovation which we have made of the four thematic areas, poverty, inequality, unemployment, and violence, we are saying all structures in the Human Rights Commission, in their various work, whether it is the protection mandate, the promotion mandate, or the research mandate, we should all be working towards addressing issues of poverty, inequality, unemployment, and violence. And we need to define for ourselves what role are we going to have in addressing issues of poverty, inequality. And we need to assess that. We've also changed our meeting regimes. We're now going to have proper quarterly reviews where everybody sits there and say, we have to measure ourselves according to these four broad thematic areas. What have we done in this quarter to contribute towards the fight against poverty and inequality? So that's what we're doing, Chair. And then going to some of the issues which you actually have raised yourself. Now, when it comes to issues of high-impact litigation, our understanding is not to go to court every day, every week, every month. That's why we've only assigned ourselves two key matters. And what we are saying is that we should assess the landscape and say, where are the pressing human rights challenges in our country, be it law, be it policy, be it conduct, and how can we use our protection mandate, our power to influence court judgments in order to advance the fight against poverty, inequality. And therefore, we must actually study that and see, because we do litigate on complaints we get around equality courts. Our reports will show we are always in equality courts. We are doing all sorts of things. But it's really about using our powers in a very decisive manner in bringing about a bigger change than what you'll achieve. For example, in the case, of course, I mean, the issue of Mombek, we took that to court, equality court. But the issue is this, you know, could we have done more to address the source of the problem than the symptoms? So this is what we're trying to say. We've got limited resources. So it means we have to use these resources in a very, very smart manner, focusing on greater impact more than quantity. And that's a challenge we are giving ourselves. And we're saying we will measure ourselves after a year. What contribution have we made along this four initiatives? And this is the first time the Commission actually has taken a very clear position that we will judge our work in terms of how we address issues of poverty, unemployment, inequality, and violence in all its forms. Then you talked about the issue of the Kara Asma. There are discussions amongst chapter institutions as to whether we merge or we don't merge. Some institutions are not supporting that. But we are saying, you know, this country spends almost 2 to 3 billion on Chapter 9 institutions. So is there a better way in which we can use this money? And we clearly support, you know, a very smart measure of some of the institutions. We can't afford to have 6 libraries in different institutions. Really? Does not make sense. We can't have 6 sets of law reports in 6 institutions when we've been sharing some of these issues. So these discussions have to happen in order to rationalize and also in order to have a greater impact, as well as trying to work much more closer together than we've been doing in the past. Then the issue of the Child Rights Commission in Western Cape, that's fine. We do have a commissioner who is responsible for child rights, and we are always trying to work with everybody to address the issues of child rights. Is quite a huge, huge area around this. Now, the issue of rentals, it is also quite a concern to us. Since the beginning, it has always been an issue. And we've had all sorts of issues to discuss this. But as the CFO was reporting, we've taken a decision that, yes, we have this little amount of money for our operations. Next year it will be 40,000 as we say. And it's for that reason we have taken a decision that we are giving up one floor in our building, in the commission, head office, in order to save 4 million rand. And that money will put into operations. Apart from the fact that we are trying to rationalize how we do our work. So that's a decisive decision we've taken. But we've also said we need to explore with public service to whether can we not get better accommodation. I was in Angola a few weeks ago on the invitation of UNDP to go and help the Angolan ombudsman around monitoring of socioeconomic rights. And I get there, the government has built the ombudsman in office. Why can't government give us one of these buildings so that we don't pay money on rentals. It's 20 years now, and these discussions are going on and on and on. And really for us to be paying this amount of money to the private sector, people are wasting that money. After 20 years, you can imagine how much money is being paid on rentals. Actually, we could have used that money to have bought a building for the Human Rights Commission. So maybe instead of giving us money for rentals, government must say we're building a building, and the money we give you for rentals will be down payment for that building. Then 20 years later, we could have our own building, then we should not be paying rent. So it's kind of embarrassing when you go to countries which are even less poorer than, more poorer than us, where government build buildings for them, and we have to pay rentals. And it takes a lot of money. $14 million for a national office compared to $3 million we spend on operations does not really make sense at all. But I also want to address the issue of operations. Sure, we spend a lot of money on human resources. But, you know, I've always said to colleagues that we are like Orlando Pirates, Real Madrid, Barcelona. Much of our money goes to our players. And these are guys who make a difference in the commission. These are lawyers who take cases, complaints every day. We get over 6,000 to 7,000 complaints. These are colleagues who go and run workshops all over the country on human rights issues. These are colleagues who conduct research. So our human resources are not people who are just sitting in offices folding their arms. These are very, very active workers. And the success of the Human Rights Commission is dependent on those human resources. And maybe we've never really had a proper analysis of, will the Human Rights Commission run through robots and less human beings? No, it doesn't work like that. But of course, we still have to make sure that we use our human resources in a much more effective manner. And you can do a comparative analysis. There is nobody like us which will not spend a lot of money on these human resources. Look at all chartered institutions and see exactly how much they allocate on the human resources. Look at government departments and see how much they allocate. So yes, maybe at some point in time, we need to have a formula of how much does a chartered institution allocate its budget on human resources, on rentals, and operations. The money we allocate for operations, it's really more for us to go to conferences, have meetings, do international meetings, but the work of the commission is done through that 70% plus allocation for human resources. But of course, the challenge is to make sure that we actually maximize the output of that. Now, on the issue of Northwest, my colleagues will speak to that, Fadler will speak to that. On the issue of constitutions, that is the work of Justice Department. We don't produce constitutions, but those are done by colleagues in Justice Department, which will just make sure that, you know, they provide enough. And of course, we do distribute constitutions in our public awareness campaigns to various colleagues. We do speak with the Foundation for Human Rights from time to time, and actually there is a talk now that we should take over the school moot competition, which was run by Center for Human Rights, funded by Foundation for Human Rights, to the Human Rights Commission. So those are some of the things we are looking at. On the issue of the two full-time commissioners based in Cape Town, the commission had taken a decision earlier on that they must stay in Cape Town. But that was clearly causing problems for us, that we have to pay commissioners to fly to Joburg every month, put them in a hotel accommodation, and we thought we could do better differently. So we took a resolution that the two full-time commissioners based in Cape Town must relocate to Johannesburg. And that is the position of the commission. Now, the other one of the youth, my colleagues will answer that. The Human Rights Commission has 9 provincial offices based in major centers in the provinces. And we do try and reach out to the mass of our country, but it can never be enough. And one way in which we are trying to address this, we are saying to our colleagues, and also to address, of course, the issue of whether do we access the poor, do we access people in squatter camps. To a large extent, our protection mandate has been complaints-driven. So we deal with complaints which come to us. And of course, people who will bring complaints to us are people who knows of the commission, have means of going to offices, have access to internet and so forth. And yet, our mandate also allows us as the commission to take matters at our own wisdom. So if I open a newspaper and I see there's a human rights violation, I can ask my staff to take the act and deal with it, or commissioners. And when one thing say, you know what, maybe we need to change our approach. Let's say 50% of our resources must be for matters which we decide our own, so that we can then see where are the gaps and we fill those gaps. And that, well, we'll be taking that decision very soon to say, from now on, 50% of the complaints we deal with are those we receive from the public. The other 50% are those which we choose, so that we drive the agenda. We're not driven by other people. It's actually very strange when the report done by the Foundation for Human Rights on the Human Rights Survey, Public Protector came first, or IEC Public Protector and the Human Rights Commission. That was okay, you know, we can do better. But then amongst, when you break it down racially, more white people know the Human Rights Commission than the other two. And more African people know more of the Public Protector than us. So of course, and we need to address that. But remember, Public Protector has got almost twice our budget. We are at 180, we are 170, they are 12 and something. They've got more staff members, so definitely they will have a better outreach than we do, even though we've got a bigger mandate. But anyway, these are things which we also need to be addressing. Now, on prior municipalities, when prior the Promotion of Access to Information Act was introduced, we were the custodians of that act. We went around all over the country, running workshops for all government departments around issues of PAIA. We do have awards every year for PAIA users. So public municipalities do know about PAIA. But the reporting rate is bad. We need to address that. But it's not only municipalities. If you look at our report, national government departments don't always report to the Human Rights Commission. We've got about 60% compliance. Same with the provinces. Our own Chapter 9 institutions don't always report to the Human Rights Commission when it comes to PAIA. So it's not just about awareness. Sure, we need to address issues of awareness, but there are also other issues. Reluctance to report. It's a problem which you know yourself as members of parliament. Yeah, and I've addressed the issue of the 1.8, but of course we need to do more about that. On the issue of violence, we are quite concerned. I mean, we regard violence as one of the most intrusive violations of human rights. And when we check over the last 20 years, how much has we as a commission been involved in addressing issues of violence? We've not been doing that well. We've been focusing on issues of socioeconomic rights. Now at least we're saying, let's focus. So I have a commissioner here, that is his responsibility. So we talk with the police. For example, we're doing a study tour in May to Europe to look at issues of monitoring detention centers. We are working with Judicial Inspectorate, we're working with IPD and Justice. And we have formed a committee which will help us to look into issues of civil political rights and violence. And we're meeting the police, we had an MOU with the police before, and we're trying to address that. We have an MOU with the Ministry of Ombudsman, and we've asked our colleagues in provinces to meet with provincial commissioners to see how we can work together with the police in order to address these issues of violence against women and children. Because really, it is one of the most intrusive. If you want to assess whether we are making any progress in this country, as far as human rights are concerned, we need to reduce the level of violence against women and children and everybody else. And it's very, very high. And it's a bad indictment, not only for us, but for government as well. We cannot claim that we're a human rights country when more than 50,000 people are murdered or raped or whatever. And where are we? So that's an issue which, the challenge which we have put for ourselves, that we need to assess to what extent are we helping to address violence as a human rights violation in ways in which we can best do as a human rights commission. And then, on the issues raised by Commissioner Mpumlan, we come from there. Sorry, not Commissioner. Honorable Member, Commissioner. Now I was thinking of my sister, my former sister, the IC. We have moved from a provincial management system where we had commissioners assigned to provinces. And we were creating some problems because then we had a commissioner for Western Cape dealing with all human rights issues. So we said, let us take a thematic area because we have a huge broad mandate. So we'll have commissioners assigned to thematic areas. But as I'm saying, we do have provincial offices. And we spend a lot of money on our provincial offices. How many people do we have in each province? 10 officials in each province, covering the work of the Human Rights Commission at provinces. We are really saying that each province must be able to do its own human rights assessment report. Because we believe the future of this commission will depend on how morale we do at the provincial and local government level. And we have staff members there. The role of commissioners is to give political oversight over the work being done by the commission, by staff. The staff are there to help commissioners fulfill their mandate. And they direct...
Advocate, as you heard, we have a crisis of transport.
Exactly 5 minutes.
Yes. If we're...
2 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so we've changed this position, and we'll see how it works, because it's in the nature of organizations to constantly review and assess of how best they do their work. And we've been having this model for 20 years of provinces and commissioners. Now we're saying, let's try a different approach and see whether it will work. But the safeguard is that we still have provincial officers. You might disagree, but that's the position we've taken as a commission. We'll see how far it goes. And I do agree, Chair, that, Honorable Chair, that of course there's a lot we can still do in making sure that we reach out to our people across the country and how we collaborate with other organizations. But there's a lot we do. We do community radio stations. I mean, I've got a Commissioner Sibangani who is forever doing giving talks on community radio stations. And we also impress on our staff members. When we present here our annual report, you will see the extent of media coverage we're having across the country in order to address these issues. Unfortunately, we can't do it here now. And then the last point then was... let me end there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as you rightly said, that the mandate of the Human Rights Commission is to shape and protect society. Now, we need to know exactly how we do this. We need to devise a plan of action in which we can actually deal with methods and ways how we can shape and protect society. We need, firstly, to make the society aware, and we need to do so proactively about what human rights means in a society. And of course, our recommendation must be implemented. To my horror, when I went visited Parliament some months ago with the chairperson, we found that the recommendation of the Human Rights Commission was shelved and collecting dust on the shelf and not implemented. So I think we need to really, really address the implementation of the recommendation that the Commission makes. It's extremely important. And the third point I want to make, it is true that we need to strengthen our cooperation with government. How do we do that? I think we need to regularly meet with ministers responsible for various portfolios that involve human rights and make sure that we have a continuous engagement with the ministers to see that these issues arising out of the portfolios are being implemented or are being addressed properly. Because there's no point in having a commission that does not have a strong cooperation with the government departments. Because many of the areas that the Human Rights Commission will deal with fall under the ambit of government sections or portfolios. So we need to cooperate with them more closely to see that there is implementation of them. That is all I need to say at this stage. Thank you.
Excuse me, Chairperson. Can I just one point, small point I wanted to raise with this gentleman? Just, yeah, finished. Oh, okay.
Thank you so much, CEO and Commissioner. Honourable Motapo, just as an update on the Liu Doringstad matter, I can confirm that we have released our report. In fact, it was served on all respondents in January already. And as recent as last week, we had a follow-up meeting with the Department of Basic Education on the matter. In February as well this year, we had a big media release, and the report is available on our website. I am happy to share that with the committee through Bonani, and if the committee permits, I'll do it that way, for your information and enrichment purposes. My colleague in the Northwest Provincial Office has just messaged me now and indicated that on they had a follow-up meeting with the department last week, as well as with SAPS and the South African Council of Educators, that 250,000 Rand was paid to the parents of the three learners which passed away in the fire, that the parents aren't happy with that settlement amount. And on the 19th and 20th of March, our Northwest Provincial Office hosted a provincial hearing on the lack of safety and security measures in schools, special needs schools, specifically in the West, in the Northwest Province. We've also now taken a decision, and it is in the responses which we submitted to Parliament following the last briefing that we appeared when we appeared last year, where we've indicated that there's also been a decision to monitor wide-scale, or rather to, that we're undertaking a wide-scale monitoring of conditions of special needs schools nationally. Of course, this is yet to be fully operationalized and will happen during forthcoming months, I presume. Thank you.
Yes, Honorable Jay, you said it's going to be very difficult, and I must agree with you, for me to go to Parliament and litigate or try and advocate for files, more files for human rights. I thought we were working together. What I hear from the Honourable CEO is that he's just coming with rebutting all what we're suggesting. We raised the question of funds and suggested means, and there's no comment on that. Instead, when one member said, we have, if you are a firm, you would definitely be thinking of closing down. You have not addressed that. And we came up with solutions, and we said, what about doing this and that? You only talked about the question of the government giving you offices, but the rest you said nothing. You even talked about a tour to Europe, and say, my God, somebody who says he doesn't have money now, he is touring Europe. And you also, we talked about the question of using technology that you can sit at home and talk and so on without having to use the flights and so on. He said, no. We want them to come here and sit down together. I think, I suggest that you rethink and say, these are the things that you don't want to take from us, or these are the things that you want to take from us. And we were suggesting these things. We would be happy if you can say, at least what you people are suggesting, we hear. We will probably sit down and consider. But when you say each and everything, you know, all of us coming to suggest something, say, no, we are right here. No. We were correct. You see, we're doing this thing. It's all good for us. So we've taken the decision. We're not changing. So it then puts us out. Now, here am I. Now I'm supposed to go and sit and talk and convince Parliament that they must give money to you. Then, as the chairperson said, it's going to be very difficult. Please do something else about it. Thank you.
And let me thank Commissioner CEO and CFO for their responses. Chairperson, on the issue of relocations of two full-time, may we be provided with deadline as to by when are they supposed to relocate? And again, Chairperson, you'll recall, Chairperson, that during interviews of the present commissioners, the issue of Isidimeni was raised, and by then the situation was not as it is now, if you recall. Yes. Then don't you think, acting Chairperson, if you or your predecessors, but Human Rights Commission is successors of the group, isn't it? Whatever they did, good or bad, you are responsible for. So don't you think if the Human Rights Commission acted differently, they acted earlier on, the situation maybe was going to be different from as it is now? And then again, issue of health is a basic human right. I'm happy the chairperson of the commission, Dr. Bongani Majola, is responsible for health. Yes. So recently there were some parties were focusing in Gauteng, especially Baragwanath, Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, on the issue of conditions of health facilities in Gauteng and so forth. And as this committee, we are very much concerned. It appears the Human Rights Commission is not so proactive in that regard. What's your take on that?
We don't actually expect you to have answers. I think it was an engagement where we raised our concerns, appreciating the good work that we've been doing, but because we actually think that this is a very important commission. We cannot go to Parliament with a picture which suggests that it was an ill-conceived commission. That you go back and really rethink some of these things, especially rentals, the programs, this outreach to rural areas, advocacy, human rights, education, and, the immediate things that can be done, because, we need to arrest the service delivery process by making sure that there are services that are provided. And things like that. Otherwise, the very democracy which gave us this human rights will end up with a time when people say, why should we go and vote for this democracy which doesn't work? Then we have apathy, then we may ask the army to run the country because there are no elections. People are not prepared to do these things. And I think your commission is very important. My view would be that maybe have another session. Sit, refine this, and where you think we are failing you as Parliament and also as government, highlight those things, make recommendations, and then we can even find space to meet with you again and engage. But we want a human rights commission which will make a great difference, because you are also the face of the human rights movement internationally. You are the ones who report on behalf of everybody to the UN. And we don't want the UN to praise us one day and wake up one day and said we made a mistake. But otherwise, we also accept that you are a new commission. You have inherited some baggage. There was a lot of working in silos before, and as Honorable Mutapo is saying, this demanding thing could have been arrested if it was not because of how, you know, the previous commission worked. So there's nothing that is being said here which is an attack on you, which is against you. We're just saying that I think we can, you have the capacity to make a great difference and improve on the work of the commission. I'll talk to the committee secretary. I know he's under pressure. We must make some time and meet with yourself and listen to you again, because this is a commission which is a leading Chapter 9 institution. It has to have the best report when we go back to Parliament. Honorable members, are we happy? Can we leave matters there, Honorable Skosana? Honorable Maile?
Yeah, Chair, I think we are happy. Well, safe to say, I think it would be good if the Commission, they can also produce a report for us on the cases that they have attended and concluded. I think for the duration of the time they have been in office, so that we can also be able to convince Parliament to say, despite the challenges that the Commission is having, but they were able to do 1, 2, 3, 4. I think we would really appreciate if we can have that kind of a report.
No, thanks, Chair. I don't think I have a problem too, but you see, the issue of life as a demon has actually opened our eyes into the problems of the health-related problems in various health institutions. And I would be happy if the Commission can be hands-on to ensure that we don't see a repeat of what happened in Gauteng. Recently, I mean, the health issues in Gauteng especially need to be critically looked at. I would be happy if the Commission can be hands-on on that issue. Thank you very much.
For on the relocation, I think, did you follow? On the commissioners who have not moved to Gauteng. Or you want to sleep over?
Chair, will provide a report on that one. As I was saying, a resolution was taken, and it will report as to how it has been realized by the Commission.
It's in your hands to deal with it. But from our researchers, can we really get a report on this meeting as early as next week, the recommendations? We need to have a program of action on what we expect from the Human Rights Commission and where we think they have to improve, so that we begin to do things differently now. We are celebrating the life and times of Nelson Mandela, Mama Sisulu, and we have to honor Zola Skweyiya, the father of the human rights culture in this country, and we can't do things like in the past. So we have to make a difference. But thank you very much. I can see, Deputy Chair, you have a CEO who hit the ground running, and they've been aging before time, I guess. So you have the capacity to make a great difference. And the pastor there, I think they're also missing him in church because he all the time is on the ground all over. So we have no doubt that you are doing the work, but we're just saying that let's tighten things and move forward. Okay, thank you very much. You are well.